Welcome back, everyone. I hope it's everyone. And Anatoly is going to tell us about binaries in BE stars.
Yeah, okay. Oh. First of all, I would like to thank the organizers of this conference for inviting me here and giving me an opportunity to talk about this issue, which is actually an old one. It arose about perhaps a century ago when BE stars were established as a class of objects, and pioneers of astrophysics like Otto Struve and Paul Merrill found some BE stars, which they suspected to be binaries, but it wasn't clear till observations at high resolution, high spatial resolution came about. Here I would like to talk about a few things. The binary hypothesis, which I got interested in about 15 years ago when I came to work with Karen Bjorkman in Toledo. Since that time, I was trying to keep up with numerous observations and other research on BE stars and binaries in particular. And looks like there are too many papers published, so I can't follow all of them, and the Ehrenhardt is the case. So I'll talk about that. Then a little bit about methods to reveal binarity, including some emerging methods and results, and also problems which one needs to take into account when you analyze your observations. And then finally, I'll give some suggestions for bright BE stars to look for binarity or re-examine previous suggestions that they were binaries. So, Gamma Cass was the first emission line star observed by visual spectroscopy already 1.5 centuries ago. At that time, so we only knew that there are emission lines in the spectra, in the spectrum of this star. Then later, turned out that there are other stars and of this kind, and their luminosities are close to the main sequence, which was already shown today. Then later, we got that they are all rapidly rotating. Because of various reasons covered in the morning, some kind of outflow from the star, which forms a very flat disk around the star, and this disk is responsible for the line emission. It wasn't clear until 1970s that binaries could play an important role in creation of the BE phenomenon. In 1975, Grzegorz and Harmanitz proposed a scenario in which one of the two stars fills its Roche lobe and pours matter and angular momentum onto the other star, and it can be spun up up to a critical rotation rate, but pretty soon Anna Pauls showed that this scenario actually may be the reason for just maybe a small fraction of BE stars. And now we know that the BE star is the main star of the system if there is a secondary companion, and it produces a decretion disk. So it's a completely different idea which we are exploring now. So what kind of statistics of binary BE stars and BE stars at all in our galaxy we have? About 30 years ago, a catalog was compiled by Carlos Jaszczyk and Agret, which contains about 1,100 objects, which are from, range from the brightest, from Ehrenhardt, till about 13th magnitude. So if you look at this selection, then turns out that about maybe one-third of them cannot be confirmed as BE stars because observations were obtained only with an objective prism, and we are not sure about the line profile, so they may be supergiants with Pisigny profiles. So we just know that they have some H alpha emission, and this needs to be investigated further. So at some point I started to look at information starting from brightest stars, and a few years ago I compiled sort of a catalog of the brightest, about 340 BE stars, down to about 8th magnitude. Not all, of course, but fainter stars still need to be observed spectroscopically at higher resolution and reclassified. So perhaps the faint tail of this catalog contains quite a number of different objects. But some statistics came out of this study. So it was very briefly published in the proceedings of the Paris Symposium and present as a poster. So this is the first talk about this work in which I take into account some recent developments. And I will show you briefly an evolution of lists of BE binaries. In 1997, there was a list published by Pavlovsky et al., which contained only 16 spectroscopic binaries with the primary BE companions. Then Doug Gaius at the Alicante meeting presented a more extensive list with 40 objects, but 13 of them were not confirmed, and some of them you may not consider as kind of truly BE binaries because they have a very evolved secondary companion. Then Peter Harmanets, almost at the same time, published a bigger list of about 160 binaries, most of which are not binaries with the BE primary companion. So only 28 objects out of that big list, which are mostly single-lined systems, appeared in this list. And more recently, Rolf Cheney took a study of about 500 early type stars, and in his list there are 17 unreported bright BE stars, which he classified as double-lined binaries. But when I talked recently to Peter Harmanets, he pointed out to me and to Rolf that some of those objects were classified as binaries on just the fact that some changes occurred in the line profiles. And we know that the line profiles may be variable due to the evolution of the disk. And so they're not necessarily SB2 binaries, and this needs this list needs some more observations and confirmation and binarity. So from my statistics of those 340 stars, BE stars, I found that there are 13 binaries out of 24 brightest BE stars, brighter than fourth magnitude. So it's a fraction of over 50%, and this is just a magnitude-limited selection. So there is no point why fainter binaries have smaller, a lower fraction. It's just a selection effect. So we know now that there are about 70 binaries out of about 250 BE stars brighter than 8 magnitude. So there can be some fainter objects, but everything fainter than this needs some reexamination and confirmation.
Are you just talking about binaries that have a visual companion?
No. The primary is a BE star, the secondary is supposed to be a normal star or something, but not a neutron star, not a degenerate companion. And they're not visual binaries, they can be discovered by spectroscopy, interferometry, photometry. So just all kinds of binaries with the BE primary. So if we look at the selection of the brightest be stars, then we find that quite a number of them have pretty strong H alpha lines. So there is some statistics for binary periods, and some stars observed with interferometry, and there are separations between the companions. Some orbits are eccentric, but most orbits are circular, opposed to B X-ray binaries, which have eccentric orbits. So I forgot Achernar, so it's a 13th star in this selection. But we also know that disks evolve, and sometimes lines, emission lines are strong, sometimes are weak. And until recently, quite a number of stars were not observed extensively spectroscopically. So, and this doesn't mean that they always have weak emission lines. So, in any case, just would like to attract your attention to that fact that quite a number of these confirmed binary stars have pretty strong H alpha emission. And if we analyze binary fraction versus the maximum observed H alpha line, well, it's maybe not very conclusive, but the strongest H alpha line B stars, well, once again, small number statistics, but they all were recognized as binaries. And here is a cumulative statistics of B binaries, so that's the number of binaries versus total number of B stars, so more than 6 or 7 out of 12 stars brighter than third magnitude of binaries, 13 out of 24 brighter than fourth magnitude of binaries, and you see here deviation from the 50% binary fraction line, and this is definitely the observational selection, so we need more observations of even stars bright as this to see the real fraction of binaries in B stars. I had some kind of ideas which came to me after I've done that analysis, that weak lined object, and I'm talking about weak lined object which don't show phases of strong emission lines or large disks. They can be either single or closed binaries because the disks are small, and strong lined objects can be wider binaries where there is more room in the disk. So if you analyze periods, orbital periods, and equivalent theists of the H alpha lines, then you can figure out some relationship between the periods and the equivalent theists. Of course, once again, small number statistics, but perhaps hotter stars, which may ionize a larger fraction of the disk, have stronger lines, and you see the growth of the H alpha with the orbital period, and the cooler objects may ionize smaller fraction of the disk. They have weaker emission lines. So once again, from this analysis, we can conclude that most B binaries are single-lined, and just from this fact, we can deduce that secondaries are much fainter than primaries. And orbital periods and spectroscopic masses, which we can derive, lead to companion separation and disk sizes, which can be used as input parameters for modeling. A little bit, since I don't have time, about methods to reveal binaries, some traditional methods, radial velocity variations. Then recently emerged a method of phase-locked violet over red peak in the line profiles, which may be useful for small disks. There can be some composite spectra, but as I said before, most of the secondaries are much fainter, so we don't see those composite spectra frequently. There can be some eclipsed binaries, but I'm not aware of those in bright B stars. And then, of course, interferometry can help with objects at eccentric orbits, so sometimes the stars are far away from each other. And if the brightness ratio is not that large, then interferometry can easily recognize it. A little bit about problems. Gamma Cassiopeiae is a binary with a 200-day period. So here you can see a change in the strength of the H alpha line and also the radial velocity change. So you need to take into account this kind of trend in order to figure out the eccentricity and the period. Sometimes there are some humps in the middle of the profile. It doesn't mean that the star is pole on. When it started losing the disk, this profile got transformed into a double peaked, and since that time it's double peaked, since 1995. A diskless phase is pretty useful. In the case of Pi Aquarii, when there was almost no disk, we saw this this component in the H alpha line which was traveling, showing this radial velocity curve. If you subtract the BE primary, then that's what you would see in the spectrum of the secondary. And this is how the primary behaves. So a few things about that new technique which observers can use. Same Pi Aquarii with already known binary period of 84 days. So you see that the viewer R in the H-alpha also correlate with that period. And if you use an SPH code to reconstruct the density structure of the disk, so this is the primary, this is the central mass, this is the secondary, this is the disk, and some disk enhancement is responsible for this modulation of the VORR variation. So may be used for weak-lined stars, because here in stronger-lined stars, the VORR variations have much longer periods. So here is a list of some suggested targets to observe. All of them have pretty strong lines. Some of those stars were suspected as binaries, but these periods still need confirmation. There are some open questions which I skip, and there are conclusions. So thank you for your attention.
Binary that I saw in many publications.
Which one?
Beta Lyra.
Well, I don't consider it in this group.
Yeah, that's my question. That mm-hmm. I didn't see not in your list and not in the candidate.
Yeah.
It could be there. So I'm wondering if you did any investigation about this system and you explained it.
As far as I understand, it's a more advanced evolutionary stage.
So you.
I don't consider it in this group.
It's traditionally not considered to be a classical BE star because it's a complicated system with lots of mass transfer. The disk of one star is probably formed by material of the other star, not as we suspect a non-BE star is formed.
Exactly.
A related question. How many BE stars are there that are BE stars because they are not single?
I think that all stars which we see as BEs sometimes, because they can lose disks, and which do not develop large disks, I think can be single, but may not necessarily be single. I didn't do that study. But I will, definitely.
Then, I think we have Karen, you, and then we have to head on.
Just a comment on your comment about monitoring these things. Obviously, that's a big component of trying to find them. And I wonder if you could just say a word or two. I know you've been working a lot with the amateur community, who are now doing a lot of spectroscopy at sort of these resolutions.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's a critical.
Yeah, so now we have hundreds of spectra in the best database, which has been established in Paris, and that's a good source for spectroscopy, but one needs to be careful with data reduction there. So, but it's a very useful source of information. Thank you.
Last question.
So, regardless of the BE star, the OB ESTAR, they are high fraction of binary
yeah.
of some clusters. So they are not have the initial line, but they have they are binary. So what's the difference between this BE binary and all these OB binaries?
I think when you refer to OB binaries, you refer to a larger coverage of evolutionary stages. So it's just a kind of a more, well, a smaller range of ages.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And then